You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good game?
Oh, yeah. Let's go. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, 710 Sports app, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, you name it. We're everywhere. There is a lot of good stuff today. Baseball meetings, Hall of Fame voting, Seahawk conversation, new Apple reviews to read for anybody interested. Hopefully these won't get Jake and Stacy making fun of me anymore and calling me old. But anyway.
That really got you right before the show started.
Yeah, huh? Well, I mean, you know, my birthday is not that far away. It's like 3 months away. And I'm starting to think about like 44 and what that means and what that's going to sound like and all. Yeah, I feel mortal.
Could be an MVP quarterback.
44, I know. But that guy had like his blood replaced. Like,
just hasn't eaten a strawberry since like 1997.
Nightshades.
Right. His surgery is all like his face doesn't look like a hair transplant. So I don't know. I don't know whether I quite make that comp. But before we move forward to today, I'm still not like 100% totally done with yesterday. Not quite. This overtime thing is still sticking with me here another day later. I can't believe how many people are making the argument. Now, look, again, little poll out there on the Twitter and at the Mike Salk, and like 77% of people think overtime rules in the playoffs need to be changed in the NFL. Good. I'm glad to see that like there's an overwhelming majority. But some of the folks that I see and some of the arguments that I see on the other side, they blow me away. And by the way, a lot of them are ex-players. Right. Brock, who we talked to yesterday, we talked to him again at 7:45 this morning. Ray Roberts was tweeting at me last night. Heath's another one of these. You had 60 minutes to win. So whatever happens after that is out of your hands. I just don't understand that. I heard Mark Schlereth making the same point, sort of that it's an everybody get a trophy mentality. I don't see that. How is wanting the rules of the game to be fairly even for both sides to be everybody gets a trophy? I'm not saying everybody deserves to win and go on to the next round. I'm just saying that we should make it even and not leave it up to complete chance. And I was talking to my wife last night about it, and she's like, she kind of looks at me and she goes, well, like, don't you just want the best team to advance? I'm like, yeah, that's what the rules should be set up for, to give the best team the opportunity to advance fairly. So I can't understand some of the arguments the other way. But I did hear two interesting solutions. Because one of this is sort of like the paying college athletes thing, where like you know that what they're doing is wrong, but you're not entirely sure how to fix it without causing some other problem. By the way, totally true in my home renovation as well. Oh, yeah, that's not going to work. No problem. We'll just do this. Yeah, but that causes this problem.
Dominoes.
How about this? Yeah, but that causes this problem. It's just like, yeah, a domino effect is awful. All right, here's two solutions. One from Kyle Brandt, who was on NFL Network. His solution is leave, this is only be for the playoffs, 10-minute overtime. You play the whole thing, so it's not sudden death. So in that way, it's closer to, I think, soccer, which does that, right? So 10-minute overtime, play the whole thing, two-point conversions are mandatory on touchdowns.
The two-point conversion thing sounds like the XFL, right?
A little bit, yeah, although they have the, like, five thing, like 5 point, 4 point, they're like,
yeah,
just
sure.
you gotta go, okay, for two. You can't, no extra points in overtime. I'd be into that. That sounds reasonable. Yes, one team could hold the ball for 8 or 9 minutes, but it'd be really hard to hold it for 10. And if you did, you would say, all right, you'd have to tip your cap to that team and say they had such a long sustained drive. Plus you would have all three of your timeouts for that quarter. It'd be hard to imagine a team could get all the way down. So I would be into that. He also said, by the way, if you think that that's too much play for the regular season, just have ties in the regular season after regulation. Okay. I mean, like, I can kind of live with these things in regulation. I don't think it's great, but okay, fine. I get that in regulation, you don't want more injuries, et cetera. You want guys to be able to go home and stay healthy. Fine. Here's the other one. If you are so consumed with the current format and say it's got to remain because you had 60 minutes, this and that, fine. All out. In the playoffs, rather than having a coin toss, and Mike Sando and I were kind of coming up with this yesterday, rather than having a coin toss decide who gets the ball, give it to the team with the better seating. If you want, hey,
yeah,
that's what baseball does, right? And essentially says that the home team has an advantage once you get to extra innings, right? Or they get their last ups. It's true all the time. Yeah. You get your last ups if you're the home team. Somebody has to do it, and we've awarded it to the home team. And once you get to the playoffs, the home team, more often than not, team with home field advantage, is the team that had a better record during the regular season. Fine. Give it to the better seed. You have the better seed, so you get the ball last. You get the ball first in overtime. Yeah. That's your advantage. You have to do something. Of the, do you seen the stats of the 11 games that have gone to overtime since the format started in the postseason? 10 of them have been won by the team that got the coin toss. It's not like it's 6-5, and this idea of like, oh, just play defense is part of the game. So is pitching. So is defense in basketball. So is defense. Like, but we don't just say, oh, like, eh, sorry, I guess you weren't able to play defense this time. I guess you weren't able to strike out all three guys, so you lose. That just doesn't. That's not the way we. That's not the way we watch sport.
I think we can all agree, regardless of if you are the type that's like, you know, rules are rules, keep them the way they are. The coin flip is the most absurd part of the entire process.
Right, that it's coming down to complete chance.
That is the most insane thing to me.
And people say, oh, you have a coin toss to begin the game. Yes, but the team that loses it gets the ball in the second half.
It balances itself.
Exactly. Yeah. This is the one thing that there is no balance for, and it stands out like a sore thumb. So, all right, there's two solutions for you. Either play a full 10 minutes, but go for two every time to try to eliminate the possibility of going longer. And if it does, so be it. Or just give it to the home team. Just say the home team gets the edge. I'm fine with that. Give it to the home team. Overtime games don't happen often enough to not just play another overtime quarter. Yeah, agreed. There have been 11 in like the last, what is it, 6 or 7 years, maybe more since this started? I think it's more. It's almost 10.
So it would have been the same result, though. The Chiefs would have gotten the ball, at least on the coin toss. The Bills had a shot at getting the ball first.
Yeah, but at least I would have felt better about the fact that the Chiefs had done something to earn that advantage. They didn't do anything to earn it the other night. It just, unfortunately for them, coin toss. In the regular season, they had a better record than the Bills, which is why they got to play the game at home. So they had done something to earn that ball, right? If you're, again, this isn't my preferred solution, but for somebody who's so unwilling to make a change, fine. Just give it to the team that earned it in some way, rather than got lucky and called heads or tails, or in this case, didn't even get lucky, got lucky because the other team called the wrong thing. We're not supposed to leave the game up to that amount of chance. Just say the regular season matters. What you did during 17 games matters. And so you're going to get the reward for that is not just getting to play at home, right? But you also get the ball first in overtime.
Let's do something crazy like rock, paper, scissors, best out of three. You imagine that under the lights?
Still all luck. Sorry, I'm not going rock, paper, scissors. I don't need them to have like game theory out there. But yeah. I do think that it would be a fairly simple way, if you want to keep the rules as is, there's a simple way to give an advantage to a team that has earned it in some way rather than a team that is not. Say, okay, hey, rather than say just stop them, like, no, have a better record during the regular season, right? We played those 17 games for a reason, and unfortunately, you weren't as good as this team, which is why they get the ball, and if they go down and score, sorry, you should have done better in the regular season over 17 games, rather than in a league that is completely geared towards offense. At the end of a game when your defense is exhausted, and you're generally playing against elite franchise quarterbacks who are so capable of going down the field in two-minute drills, you have to stop them or else, and they don't have to stop you or else. You're taking the most of the whole game is built around the quarterback position until you get to overtime. And then one of the teams doesn't get the opportunity to use the thing they've built their whole team around. Senseless, completely senseless. So that's where I'm at. If you got texts on this, you can send them in 206-421-3776. All right. Coming up today, we're going to go around the station, Jake and Stacey, with a great, great point. I love Stacey's point about Russ and how he's sort of the Gen X of quarterbacks, even though he's not a Gen X guy. We'll hit that coming up in 50 or 20 minutes right after we tell you every single thing you need to know, including some really good news on the baseball front. It's all next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
All right, Mike Salk Show 710, ESPN, Seattle 710sports.com. Salk, what happens when you get two number one seeds in the Super Bowl and the game's tied at the end of regulation with your new rule? We'll use the same things that they use to determine, you know, conference record, divisional record. They get a million different tiebreakers in the NFL. I really don't think it would be a huge problem. All right, we'll go around the station in 15 minutes. Right now, let's tell you what you need to know.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, Tom Brady's future should matter to you, and not just as an NFL fan, but as a Seahawks fan. The seven-time Super Bowl winner is mulling his options following the season, said yesterday he is undecided about returning for another go.
Playing football, I get so much joy from. I love it. But not playing football, there's a lot of joy in that for me also now, too, with my kids getting older and seeing them develop and grow. So all these things need to be considered, and they will be.
Yeah, we'll see which direction he ends up leaning, but, you know, sounds like he's certainly considering it a lot. If he does indeed hang him up, it would mean the Bucs would be in the market for a new quarterback, possibly rebuilding after this run as well with Brady and Gronk, etc. Well, the Seahawks play the NFC South next year, and so Tampa's on their schedule. Factor in the rest of that division, and John Glayton said yesterday, could have to add up to a Seahawks playoff appearance.
If the NFC South doesn't have Brady at Tampa Bay, doesn't have Sean Payton over at New Orleans, you've got Matt Rhule, who's probably going to get fired at Carolina. Atlanta's just average right now, and they play that, along with the fact that they play the fourth-place schedule, where they get the Jets, the Giants, a couple teams like that.
Yeah, that's John Clayton magic right there. Take a look at the schedule next year, and heck, you're already in the playoffs. Again, you can see the reasons why the team has decided to try not to rebuild, but to move forward. They were 7-10 in the best division in football with two NFC championship teams, three playoff teams, an injured quarterback, the wrong defensive coordinator, a new offensive coordinator, and a little bit of bad luck thrown in. They finished strong, and they got a weak schedule next year. So, yeah, I can see why they're deciding to go for it. All that's fine, but it shouldn't allow them to rest on their laurels, right? They should still need to improve their pass rush, D-line, offensive line, and some of that should come through free agency, a route that they have traditionally avoided.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Get people in a room together with the prospect of all of them losing money if they can't agree, and sometimes you get a little progress. That's what it felt like yesterday as representatives from Major League Baseball and the Players Union met, got closer together, and then agreed to meet the next day, that being today. Even better, we heard some signs of progress as the players are willing to drop some of their previous demands and lower the ask on others. More specifically, they agreed to drop their proposal for age-based free agency, meaning the two sides will negotiate whether free agency will start after 6 years as it does now or be lowered to five. Players also backed off their ask that revenue sharing to the small market teams be cut by $100 million a year. They're now asking that to be closer to $30 million. Look, I tend to side with the players on a few of these issues. I'm not sure it's the best thing, though, for the game long term. I do believe it helps them get to an agreement sooner, and that's good. I also think the players have a pretty good argument for raising the league minimum from $570,000 to $775,000. On other issues, though, I think the players are holding out for something not as important or as positive, like draft lottery for teams at the bottom. Who cares? Raising the competitive balance tax to a higher threshold? I don't think those are the best uses of their time. Regardless, sides will meet again today as they work to get something done before spring training is set to start in a few weeks. Baseball Hall of Fame results will be released later today as well. Could see up to three players inducted. David Ortiz has been leading the way in his first year of eligibility. He's likely to go in. Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, both trending above the line in their last year. Scott Rowland gaining momentum in his fifth. Curt Schilling likely to fall short in his last season as well. Look, I'm all for Bonds and Clemens getting in. I would absolutely vote for them, but why them and not Sammy Sosa? Dude's got 609 career home runs and OPS nearly 900. He gets left out while Bonds and Clemens go in? McGuire got left out? I'm sorry, I just don't get that.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Kraken back at it tonight, trying to keep up the success in the last 2 weeks. They've won 3 out of 4 due to some improved goaltending, fewer costly turnovers, and a timely goal or two. Nashville coming to town tonight with one of the best records in the league, but they have lost 4 of their last 6, so there you go. You may remember the Kraken won their first meeting which was the first win in team history. Brandon Tanev may not be playing the rest of the season, but that doesn't mean he's going to disappear. In fact, sounds like we'll be seeing a lot more of him. He'll essentially be a public ambassador for the team while he recuperates. New role should allow him to be a semi-frequent guest on the Root broadcast, so you'll hear things like this.
I'm going to go up there and just try to keep things light. You know, the opportunity comes to go up there and just have some fun. Obviously, it's a different aspect that I'm not used to, and I think it's going to be an opportunity to have some fun and connect with everybody in the broadcast booth. You know, have some fun, maybe throw some subtle jabs at some teammates along the way and see how they take it. But no, it's a great opportunity, you know, the team presented, and it's going to be a fun one.
He thinks it's going to be fun, in case you didn't catch that word in there. In addition, we could see him interacting with season ticket holders and or local youth hockey programs. It is actually pretty cool. Light schedule in the NBA last night. Suns win a premier matchup with the Jazz. Devin Booker with 33. Chris Paul, a rebound short of a triple-double. Cavs sneak by the Knicks. New Orleans over Indiana. And the Bulls win, even without DeMar DeRozan. They get past Oklahoma City. That is everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour. Here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You said a lot of words there about baseball.
Yeah.
Talk to me in terms I understand. Are we close or not?
No. Closer.
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 And meeting today.
Yes. They met yesterday and decided to meet again today. That sounds good, right?
That sounds good. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they met and now they want to meet again. They still have some really major hurdles to get past. And, you know, you got trust issues and you've got fundamentally different views. But the players had some things that they wanted that they dropped from their request. That the owners just said flat out, no. Okay, cool. I think they're focusing on some of the wrong things, but I mean, it's sort of like what the NFL players did, right? They realized they weren't going to get some of the really big things that they wanted changed, and so they went after little things. I think the NFL players made it worse. Oh, we're not going to get the money we want, so we're going to make sure there's less practice time. Cool. Now the product's just worse. Nice job, guys. I mean, like, you know, sometimes that happens and the owners go, all right, well, we got to give up something. So sure, you can have less practice, but like, we're not giving you any more money, mm-hmm. right? The Baseball Player Association has a little bit more juice than the NFL does. And generally, they're a little bit more together. But the NFL threatened yesterday, or the Major League Baseball threatened yesterday and said, hey, we're willing to miss games. So kind of once they start saying that, now it doesn't make it true. That may just be positioning. You know, there's a lot of kind of everybody's puffing out their chest and trying to show what they're capable of and try to give themselves a leverage point. But the fact that they're willing to meet again today, I think, is a good thing. It only lasted a couple of hours yesterday. Apparently, there were some heated exchanges, but they agreed to come back today and keep meeting, which I think is a very good sign. So we'll see what ends up happening.
So not close, but closer.
Not close, but closer.
Better than further away.
Yeah, and I would say you got about another week to try to get something done here before spring training doesn't, you know, get delayed in some regard.
Yeah.
Games don't start until March, so maybe you got 2 or 3 weeks before games would be missed, but generally they report a couple of weeks before games start.
Right.
So we'll kind of see where we'll follow it, man. I really hope to see some good news out of that. I would really like to see baseball return sooner rather than later. All right, you want to hear a review? I got some good reviews. Do you want to hear a review here?
Oh, yeah.
I've got a few. Let's see. I've got Salk, Mora, and these are all Apple Podcast reviews. This is a really, really long one from Timoth Quiet. Salk, Mora, what? What are you laughing at?
You just made a sound. That wasn't a word.
Yeah, that wasn't a word.
Well, that's his name, Timoth Quiet. I didn't write it. Timethquet. How would you pronounce that? Not Timoth Quet?
We'll go with it.
Salk, you guys shouldn't laugh. You're included on this one. Salk, Mora, and Justin are the best there is. Oh. There have been many great 710 teams over the years, but this current iteration may be my favorite. How about that? It says some nice things about me and then says, but Mora and Justin are the secret spice. There's a chemistry that feels truly special and enjoy listening into the three of you banter every day like friends at a bar. Particularly so because I'm overseas for the winter and keeping up with the Seattle sports team is difficult. So there you go.
Oh, that's cool.
Isn't that very nice?
I like that. Secret spice for like doing the salt bay thing.
P.S. You can be my daddy, Salk. So apparently this is now becoming a thing. Oh, I don't know why. I kind of wish it would stop.
Oh, that's going to stick. This weird, creepy stuff.
I know. I don't care for it in any way. All right. I'll give you some more a little later. I've got some other pretty funny ones. Up next, though, we are going to buzz around the station. Jake and Stacy with some thoughts on a potential defensive coordinator and Michael Bumpus' thoughts on the Seahawks defense. We got a whole bunch of stuff. We'll do it together next. Mike Salk Show. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
call this my favorite Pearl Jam song. How about that? I'll say it. I'll say it out loud. Not afraid.
It's not really a controversial take, is it?
I think it probably is. State of Love and Trust.
Yeah, but it's your favorite song. You didn't say it's the best.
It's the best. I like it the best.
Now
so
make it controversial.
Let's make it controversial. Let's make music controversial. This is the best. Don't you argue with me. All right, let's see. I'm going to play you some sound from other folks around the station here as we buzz around. I love doing this. This is one of my favorite things we've been doing on the show. And it does lead, by the way, I hope, to people discovering some of the other things around. I did one of these reviews I was finding on the podcast reviews. It says, hey, I was so excited about this that I ended up finding the Jake and Stacey show, which is kind of cool. Somebody who's an old Brock and Salk listener found this show and was like, hey, I'll try the Jake and Stacey show because I heard you talking about Jake and Stacey, and now they love that show as well. So I thought that was kind of a cool little nice piece. And even though they're mean and kind of evil and calling me old and this, that, and the other.
Both very funny. And
yeah. Well, I don't think it's funny to call me old. I would say it's just sort of inappropriate, mean, and it's the kind of thing these young whippersnappers do these days. So I don't really understand where they're coming from. Let me play you some sound. Here is Jake and Stacey talking about where this team is at up front.
Let's go ahead and ask that question of ourselves, Jake. How close or how far away are the Seahawks from competing at this level? It's hard for me not to look at this, especially on the AFC side, and say pretty far.
Yeah, I would be right there with you. I mean, when you talk about a speed explosion standpoint, I don't think the Seahawks are anywhere near what the Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs are. If you're talking this weekend, again, confirm to me how important it is that you do have a great defensive line and offensive line. Look at the Bengals, for example. On the defensive side, they've got a great defensive line, a great defensive pass rush. On the other side, they could have lost that game very easily to the Tennessee Titans. Why? Not because their skill position players couldn't play or Joe Burrow wasn't good enough, but because their offensive line, they couldn't function half the time. I mean, Joe Burrow got sacked 9 times, Stacey. 9. And I have to imagine with a better offensive line for Joe Burrow, the Cincinnati Bengals are actually able to push the ball down the field, that they're actually able to do and run the type of offense that they have been able to for the majority of the year, which would have put the Titans in a bad spot. You know, watching some of these teams and seeing these pass rushes be able to legitimately take over a game, Stacey, where you can just see it. It's palpable. The quarterback and the opposing quarterback and the opposing offensive coordinator are having to change the way they play the game or call the game because that other side is so dominant with their pass rush.
Well, that's some good stuff in there from Jake and Stacey. And maybe in their youth, they still believe that teams can be perfect and that they don't have to make trade-offs. But in the NFL, life's about trade-offs.
And they're idealists.
Well, perhaps the idealism of youth, right? What is it? I don't know, whatever. I'm not going to get into the idea of idealism of youth, but perhaps that's what it is. In the NFL, you've got to make trade-offs. All right, let's take a look at that Bengals team. I went a different direction with it. I saw a team that went a quarterback that was able to overcome the fact that his offensive line was a sieve and still win the game and throw for 350 yards at it. I thought that was pretty impressive. But the NFL kind of requires two things. One, it requires you to make trade-offs. If you want to improve the Bengals' offensive line, you can. They just needed to draft an offensive lineman instead of Ja'Marr Chase.
Mm-hmm.
You cool with that? Are they the same team with a better left guard but no Ja'Marr Chase?
Well, Penei Sewell was available, and a lot of people, including me, thought they made a poor decision in taking Chase at the time
and
because
maybe they did.
Burrow got hurt the year before.
That's fine. I'm not saying that you shouldn't make that decision. You may decide that offensive line and Penei Sewell, who was also really, really good this year, maybe that's more important for your team. But you don't get both.
No, I think Chase turned out to be the right decision.
Perhaps he did. Obviously, that he's been truly amazing. I mean, that dude's incredible. So is Penei Sewell. They were two really good players that were available in that spot. Life's about trade-offs. In the NFL, with a number of resources you have, not to mention the salary cap, it's really hard to be good at everything. Right, you've got to make some choices about where you want to put your resources. They chose wide receiver instead of offensive line. I get that you want to criticize the O-line, but if you do, all right, fine. Make the change. Just take Ja'Marr Chase off and tell me whether you think they're in the same spot. The other problem you have in the NFL is that you're going to miss. Everyone does. The very, very best NFL general managers, draft, evaluators, scouts, they all miss. They miss all the time. The miss rate in the NFL is enormous. So just say, well, just put a couple resources into this. Just fix it. Just get it right. Well, all right, they could have taken Ja'Marr Chase and gotten better players in the third or fourth round or made a better decision in free agency. Yeah, that's true. And over time, you've got to take a look at the rate that you're hitting versus the rate that other teams are. And perhaps the Seahawks have not been hitting at a high enough rate in free agency, in the draft, etc. In fact, I would agree that they have not been. But teams aren't going to be perfect. Teams are going to have to sacrifice something. And so one of the challenges in baseball, or in the NFL, it's not baseball, where you just spend more money. Well, we got a problem here. Cool, spend more money on it. I mean, you can always criticize your owner and say, well, you should have just spent more. Right? That's sort of what George Steinbrenner did to baseball. Well, you know, we got to make some sacrifices. We got a really good pitching staff. We're good in the outfield. We got some problems in the infield, but you can't fix everything. Sure you can. Just go get a better infield. Go spend more money. Sorry. Right? I mean, that excuse is taken away from you in baseball. It's not in the NFL. You are going to have to make some trade-offs. You're not going to hit every time. And because you've got to invest in one place or another, yeah. Now, I think the Seahawks have made some mistakes in terms of where they've invested. I would love to see more on the offensive and defensive line, specifically on the D-line. Specifically, I think that you have the opportunity with the defensive line to change the game all the time. And we're going to talk more about that at 7 o'clock. But you got to make trade-offs. You got to make difficult choices if you want to be in the NFL. All right, let me give you a little bit more. Here is Wyman and Bob saying the Seahawks are already all in.
Looking at this weekend, Dave, 49ers are in the NFC title game, second time in 3 years. Last year, they were just totally just destroyed by injuries. Rams are in their second NFC title game in 4 years. So where does that end? We saw the Cardinals fell flat, but they looked like they were on the come. They were going to be an exciting team. They were a playoff team. So everybody around you in this division is succeeding on to different degrees. So where does that put the Seahawks? Does that change their level of urgency? Does it change, you know, hey, we've got Russell here for the next 2 years at least. That's where his deal ends. Pete's going to turn 71. If Bobby comes back, how much time does he have left? It feels like we're kind of reaching a point of not desperation, not panic, but sort of like, if you're going to go for it with this group, you better go for it now.
I feel like they're going to go about business just like they always do, that every year is absolutely urgent. Every year we're trying to win as many games as possible. And, you know, and even the teams that don't, you know, they end up with a 5-12 record, you know, they're still trying as hard as they possibly can to get the right guys and the right combination and the right coaches and all of that. So, yeah, I don't think that all of a sudden it's a kick in the butt. I think that they expected this. But I have to say, though, Bob, I did feel yesterday like we're not in this league right now, especially, you know, watching the AFC. I was like, mm-hmm. I pictured our defense against both of those guys and was just like, man.
It wasn't a good thought.
We're a long ways away.
All right, so I'm going to definitely agree with what Dave said at the end. I mean, watching what those teams were doing, and the AFC does seem to be sort of the more powerful division at the moment with a lot of the good young quarterbacks. The Seahawks definitely feel far away from that. So what are you going to do in order to get there? I have some thoughts. But the other part I think I will disagree with on a little bit, yes, of course all teams are trying to win, but this comes back to the conversation we were having last week about right now versus the future, right? All teams are trying. I mean, the goal of every team should be, how do I win a Super Bowl the fastest? Right?
Sure, yeah.
What's my quickest path to winning a title? For some teams, that path is immediate. I have the franchise quarterback. I have some of the pieces around him. What other extra pieces do I need to add in order to get there? For other teams, that path is a little bit less immediate. I'm looking for my franchise quarterback. I'm looking to put some of the right pieces around him. Right? I have the right coach. I don't have the right coach. There are different stages of where they are in sort of an up and down continuum in the NFL. I think the argument right now is that if the Seahawks have a couple more years here with Russell Wilson, who is still in his prime, but that isn't going to last forever, and we've seen what the Rams have done by sacrificing part of their future in order to benefit the present, should the Seahawks do that? That's really the question. It's not about whether or not you're trying hard. All teams are trying hard. I totally agree with Dave. But that's not really the question. The question is whether or not you are sacrificing something in order to win now. I don't actually want the Seahawks to trade too many more of these first round picks. I know they don't have any at the moment, but I don't actually like that strategy. What I do think they need to do is spend more money in free agency and spend on fewer players with higher dollar amounts and higher impact. I think in the past they've taken more of a scattershot approach, and I think Jake's absolutely right on when he points to what they did in the offensive line 2 years ago. Instead of just signing Jack Conklin, who is a Pro Bowler, they signed three guys who aren't very good. Brandon Shell and Kyle Fuller, and I don't even remember the third guy's name, didn't do very well. Like, if you would sign for the same price Jack Conklin to be your right tackle, you're a better team. So I think that's sort of the idea of being more invested in the current rather than this sort of, hey, we're taking our we're looking to now and the future, and we're taking more of a broad approach and trying to minimize risk. Now you got to go all in a little bit, and once you make the deal for Jamal Adams and you've sacrificed even more in the short term and you've got Russell Wilson in the prime of his career, double down on that, right? Make sure that you're then spending some of the money that you need to spend to get better.
Didn't I just, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't last week or the week before we were talking about getting, you know, cutting Bobby's salary, and you're like, would you want Bobby and this, or yes, would you want to get rid of that money and have four guys at $4 million?
Isn't that, I don't think I said four guys at $4 million.
Or something like that.
No.
Spread
not,
that money
no,
out. So
no,
is the
no,
opposite.
No, no, it's not what I'm saying. No.
You didn't say that last week.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
That's how you end up with, they went out and got B.J. Finney, a backup from the Steelers at center for like $3 million. You don't
not
want,
what I
that's
want.
Still kind of a bargain guy.
I want the $17 million you're spending on a middle linebacker to go to an end. To go to somebody who can affect the game more than him. I don't want a bunch of mediocre players. I do want some great ones. Mm-hmm. I just don't think they're at the right position right now or playing at that high level. Huge difference.
Okay.
Huge, mega, massive difference. I do want them to spend their money on a couple of great players. I just want them to play the positions that you need them to play.
We've got a couple of texters back-to-back here arguing that they've already sacrificed the future. When they made the Jamal Adams trade, right, and they didn't go all in then, do you think they can recover from that still?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know.
Have you
the Jamal Adams trade feels to be so troubling in so many ways, and the fact that it's now the number 10 pick is such a mess. I don't know whether you can overcome that, but that's why I had to come up with my 5-point plan to fix the defense. I think it's essentially trying, again, the word is fix, not create. It's trying to fix what you've broken with the Jamal Adams deal, the Bobby Wagner signing, etc. You've kind of broken this thing. So how do you fix it? One, hire a new defensive coordinator. They're on that. Two, find whoever it is to fix Jamal Adams and figure out the right way to use this guy that you spent all these resources on. Three, you need a pass rusher. You need somebody who, and just get the whole pass rush to be better. Is Carlos Dunlap a part of that? Sure. Is Daryl Taylor a part of it? Absolutely. Are they enough? Wrong. Mm-hmm. Next guess. You got to bring in another premier guy to move everybody down a rung and get better at the position. That means you got to spend money. Where are you going to come up with that money? Unfortunately, you probably need to cut Bobby Wagner. That has the additional advantage of maybe bringing in somebody who's going to be more aggressive and maybe make a couple of plays now and again behind the line of scrimmage. Some impact. So that's number four. And then number five, and this is a really hard one, it's probably the hardest of the group, is to find that disruptive interior defensive presence like we saw on display this weekend, right? Aaron Donald, obviously you know what he can do. It doesn't have to be quite at that level, but Jeffrey Simmons is sure a pretty good, reasonable facsimile. How about the guys that they have in Tampa? By the way, it's not even just Vita Vea. Who's that other dude with the hyphenated name they were bringing in now and again? That dude was getting in the backfield all the time and attacking the Rams. I'm blanking on his name. I'm sorry. I'd never heard of the guy until this weekend. But I'm watching him going, that guy is aggressive. That guy is disruptive. That's the kind of player you're talking about who makes things happen up the middle. He's good. So that's the...
Oh, Sean Murphy Bunting?
No.
That's a cornerback, actually.
It's not Sean Murphy Bunting. I literally have never heard of this guy. I promise I will look it up in the break and get back to you. But he was pretty good. He was a defensive nose tackle type who came in for Vita Vea for Tampa Bay.
Nunez Rocha.
Yes, that's it.
Raheem.
Yes.
Second string.
He's good. That dude was disruptive. I saw him in the backfield all the time. I loved it. There aren't that many of those guys. They're hard to find. But that's why it's a fix the defense, not a create a good defense. They've got to fix some of what has been broken. All right, let me give you a little bit more Jake and Stacey. This is talking about the quarterback rivalry, and we certainly are seeing it developing right now with Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen and how Russell Wilson was sort of deprived of an opportunity.
Mahomes and Allen, it doesn't just feel like, oh, they're actually getting there and winning, so we're all looking at them. It feels like they are just genuinely, the talent is just above everyone else. Like, what Mahomes can do is just better than what everyone else can do. Like, better than Russell Wilson. Better than any of these other guys. It's just better. I think that's part of it, too, though, is it's not just like, on the one hand, yeah, Russell Wilson wasn't in Super Bowls, but he also never had, like, a counterpart, really. Like, Andrew Luck retires, RG3 gets hurt, Cam Newton has his MVP season, and he's in there, but then he's kind of hurt, because for a while, Cam and Russ were seeing each other in the postseason, but neither of them were ever also considered, like, big arm guys, whereas Mahomes and certainly Allen are. Like, it's the type of quarterback, it's whether or not they have a counterpart, and then especially in the case of Mahomes, and also Allen, it's just genuinely that the talent is that rare that it may very well have been, like, 15 years since we've seen that.
Russell's a very talented special quarterback in his own right, but why has that conversation overshadowed him? Well, because the older quarterbacks have continued to keep playing at an unbelievable level. Rodgers, Brady, I mean, you know, Manning, when he was finishing out, Drew Brees has still been in the conversation for a really long time. And then you see, you know, not only the young quarterbacks, right, with Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, but how good they've been, how good their teams have been, and how far they've been able to progress and move forward. And I think that when you have, you know, those middle-tier quarterbacks, either they have fallen off of injury or they just haven't been able to stay, like in Russell's case, stay relevant in the conversation and getting into deeper playoff categories, or to have an offense that's solely focused around him. That is not the question for somebody like any of these quarterbacks: Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, Justin Herbert. From day one, when those guys arrived, they were the offense.
Yeah, and all of those guys were first-round picks who everybody assumed were going to do that. Russell Wilson played his way up into it. By the way, the Russell Wilson we got in 2012 was not capable of building an offense around. And I would also argue they did build to his strengths. His strengths, certainly at that time, and I would argue even over the last few years, have not been the same as those guys. He doesn't work best dropping back 40, 50 times a game. They did work around Russell's strengths. Daryl Bevel and Pete Carroll, who had never in their lives run read option, introduced the read option, right? And Russell's great at it. He thrived in it. He became the greatest winner in the first, whatever, 8 years or 9 years, whatever it is, in NFL history. What do you mean they didn't build around Russell Wilson? They built around his strengths. They didn't build around his perceived strengths, what he wanted maybe, but they built around what they thought were his strengths. And it worked. It worked incredibly well. This sort of revisionist history of Russ didn't get a fair shot at that, I'm not sure I'd buy it. What I do buy was Stacy's point 100%, that Russ is sort of the Gen X of quarterbacks, right? He had the baby boomers above him, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, throw Aaron Rodgers into that mix, Drew Brees, right? These four guys who were around before he got there and had an unbelievable amount of success. His contemporaries made him a very small and forgotten generation because Andrew Luck ended up retiring early and never winning. Cam Newton got to a Super Bowl and never really did anything again, got hurt, et cetera.
RG3
never amounted into anything because of injury. And so Colin Kaepernick left the game early. All of the
Tannehill was in his draft.
Andy
draft class.
Dalton ended up doing nothing. I mean, like, those guys that were with him ended up kind of fading away in one shape or form or another. And so all of a sudden you get this next generation, this millennial group that comes up of Patrick, and they, I think, actually are millennials. Maybe they're Gen Z. I don't know. But Patrick Mahomes and now Josh Allen, right? And maybe Joe Burrow's going to be in this list and a couple of other guys. And Russell feels like Gen X. Like, hey, what about me? How can we get skipped? We had the 80s. Why doesn't anybody care about us, right?
Weird to think Nick Foles and Kirk Cousins were in Russell's draft class too, because
think of Kirk Cousins.
I just don't.
Oh, I do, because when he came out, when they drafted Russell ahead of Kirk Cousins, there was like three or four Michigan State players who said that the NFL was the stupidest league in the world, how anybody could take Russell Wilson ahead of Kirk Cousins meant that they were insane and biased and this and that. Oh, I'll find you the article. It's embarrassing. It's so sad.
Yeah, well, Brock Osweiler was picked before Russell, too.
Right?
So I mean, Brandon Whedon.
God, when you go through some of that, I mean, the rest of his contemporaries fell off. That's a really good point. And it does leave Russ sort of caught in between, you know, who is he? He's not retiring and fading away like the boomer group I was just talking about. But is he capable still of competing with that next group below him? Is he going to catch Patrick Mahomes? Is he going to be as good as Josh Allen looks to be right now if these last couple of weeks are real? Right, Joe Burrow, who seems to be ascending and on this Tom Brady-like track, imagine if he wins this weekend and goes to a Super Bowl? Right? I mean, that's sort of the spot Russ is in right now of trying to figure out where he's at and how he catches the young bucks, because the old group is on their way out and he's now about to become part of the older class. Right? Gen X, just like we started off the show, Jake and Stacey calling me old. We're getting old, unfortunately. I don't think we believe it yet. I think that we're struggling with the idea that we're sort of ascending into where our parents were. But I think Russ is sort of in that same spot right now. And I understand maybe he's having a quarterback midlife crisis. That's kind of what this feels like.
Yeah.
Except instead of running around looking for a sports car and a 22-year-old to date, he's out there, you know, looking for a different offense. Looking for a better offensive line. Instead of being content and trying to work with what he's at and make it better and make himself better, I think Russ is having a quarterback midlife crisis. And has been now for over a year. I hope it's ending. I hope he's seen the right therapist who's like, hey, man, I'm glad you got the Ferrari, but like, time to move on. Time to be satisfied with where you're at. You made choices that got you here. Just like the midlife crisis guy didn't need to get married, didn't need to have kids, made those decisions, didn't need to stay in the same job. Hey, Russ, you twice decided to re-up with this organization. Yeah. You didn't need to do that. You made your bed. Go lie in it. Go make the best of it. Stop whining. And let's move it along here, pal. Yeah, go win another Super Bowl.
Most fans would agree with you on that take.
I don't know if they would. I think there's quite a few who would very strongly disagree with me.
There's
on
a
that
lot
take.
That are just like, hey, man, I just want, like you just said, you signed two deals. Let's get back to just playing here and quit complaining.
I would hope more feel that way because honestly, I don't know what you tell people. Maybe I should talk to my wife. She's the therapist and see what she tells people who are having midlife crises. Or maybe I should go through one myself and see what she tells
that
me.
That sounds like a better idea.
Heather, I've got a plan. Going to get a Porsche. I know we've got two kids. I know we're constantly driving around. We need an SUV. But I think what we need is an old school 911. Let's get it done. What do you think? I'm sure she'd love it. All right, coming up next, I know we're all guilty of recency bias. We tend to see things and think they're the biggest and the best and the only way to succeed moving forward. But should we think outside of that this week in particular? We'll discuss next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.